This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
You're listening to GeekRed, episode number 25. Hey everybody, I'm Steve Rickyberg, and welcome back to GeekCred, the show that brings you behind-the-scenes interviews to give you the inside scoop on everything geek, from tech to sci-fi to games. Before we get started, I want to remind you that you can check out the main website over at www.geekcred.net, or if you want to get in contact with me, you can email geekcred@geekcred.net. Coming up on this episode, I have an interview with Scott Corelli, the creator and producer of comedy audio drama Geek by Night. But first, it is good to be back with you again. Between college and family issues, my grandmother broke her hip. It's been crazy around here. But it's always good to be sitting here behind the mic bringing you some more Geek Cred, because that's really all you want, right? On this episode, I want to give a very warm welcome to our sponsor, GoToMyPC. Over recent years, the traditional office has become more of a touchpad than a daily destination. Long gone is the reliance on a landline to work away from the office. More people are performing work from home or other locations thanks to technologies like GoToMyPC that let you take your office wherever you go. With GoToMyPC, you have freedom from the office, enhanced work-life balance, and increased work flexibility. When choosing a remote access service, you need to make sure it's easy to set up, easy to use, and affordable. That's why you need GoToMyPC, and you can try it free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit gotomypc.com/techpodcasts. That's gotomypc.com/techpodcasts. Take your office wherever you go with GoToMyPC. I want to thank GoToMyPC for sponsoring this episode of Geek Cred. Well, now that we've taken care of business, let's move right into trivia. Last episode's trivia question was, what was the original use of Intel's 8080 microprocessor? Now, the correct answer is the 8080 was multipurpose by design, but it first found widespread adoption in traffic light control systems. This was correctly answered by... Okay, correctly answered by nobody. Nobody gets the geek cred for that one this time around. And this episode's trivia question is, what award-winning director was offered the helm of Return of the Jedi, but turned it down? What award-winning director was offered the helm of Return of the Jedi, but turned it down? A little bonus, what movie did they choose to direct instead? Think you know the answer? Send them in to geekcred@geekcred.net. Here's your chance to prove just how much geek cred you've really got. Or, another way to show off just how much geek cred you've got is by submitting your own trivia questions. I'm always on the lookout for some great trivia questions. And now let's move right into our featured interview. I am pleased to welcome Scott Corelli, the creator of Geek by Night, to Geek Cred. So how are you doing tonight, Scott?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. How you doing?
Good. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your background. Who is Scott Corelli?
I don't really know where to start. I guess I'll just start at the important stuff. Let's see, I moved to Indiana the sophomore year of high school, which is where I met Ben Noblett, who has been my best friend ever since then. And 2005, we actually started our first podcast, and podcasting wasn't something I was really familiar with, and I didn't know anything about it. But at the time, I was actually working at a factory, and I was allowed to listen to an MP3 player, so I took advantage of that and listened to it. It's a monotonous job and it can drive you nuts. After a while, I mean, you know, I love music, but after a while, I mean, there's only so much you can listen to without that getting repetitive and driving yourself crazy because I consider myself have a pretty massive music collection on my iTunes, but you just get bored after a while. So I started looking into it and Ben was like, well, have you ever heard of podcasts? And I was like, what's that? And explained, that sounds awesome. That sounds perfect. So first thing that came to mind when I thought of a podcast I wanted to listen to, because he did say that they were fan made. So I was like, okay, well, what fans would I want to hear a podcast about? So I typed in Buffy. like when I was in high school, my my mother actually wouldn't let me watch Buffy, not because it was a bad influence on me, but because she was afraid. Like, all of my brothers are, like, my oldest brother is 5 years younger than me, so there's a pretty massive age difference. She just didn't think the maturity level was there or whatever, so I couldn't watch it. So once they started coming out on a DVD, I got them and watched them profusely. And that was around that time. So I was really into Buffy. And so I looked that up and I found the Buff cast, which is run by Randy McKinney and Wayne Porter. And they do another show that's like just a regular kind of geek interest show called Geek Entertainment. When I started listening to that, I just started thinking, you know, Ben and I just, we do this all the time. why don't we just start doing this? I talked to him about it, and he was just like, I don't know. That seems, you know, I don't really know why. And I was just like, whatever. Let's just try one episode. We'll do it, and we'll see what happens, you know? So then Christmas 2005, I got a mixer and a couple mics, and we recorded our first episode of Two Geeks, a Mic, and a Podcast, and we loved it. I mean, we've been doing it for, you know, going on 3 years now, and I could never think of my life without it. I love podcasting. So, you know, I was doing that for a really long time, and once you start actually podcasting, podcasts in general, you start to get more picky. And it was at that point that things started to dwindle down. So then I started looking for other types of podcasts, and that's when I discovered audio drama. And I didn't really think much of it at the time because a lot of it was either like old radio style stuff from like the 30s and 40s, that kind of style. Not really my thing. So, you know, I kind of was just like, oh, well, you know, it's there if I ever want it. And I never really went back to it. Until, again, Buffy reared her head and I discovered Buffy Between the Lines. I heard about it, and once it actually started being released, I started to realize the benefits of audio drama and things like that. And there was a time right around that period that Ben and I were talking about video podcasts and how we would like to do video because we're big into video production and filmmaking and that kind of thing. At the time, you know, the budget just, it was ridiculous. But I'd already conceived this show about these friends that work at a comic shop and you know, end up getting superpowers. Because the thing with me, with comics and everything, I love comics. I do. But very rarely do you ever find someone with superpowers who actually wants and enjoys them. Like, it's always a burden, always.
Yeah.
The people who get the powers are never like, man, I really wish I'd get powers. And then they finally get them. So, like, that was kind of my goal with creating this thing. And like I said, originally we thought of it as a video show. We wrote a few episodes. We went to my local comic shop and we pitched him the idea. And he was like, yeah, if you want to come in early in the morning, you know, like, I'll let you shoot it here and everything. But ultimately, we, you know, the more we got into it, the more we realized that it wasn't going to happen. Cause that's the thing with video is everybody that's in the show needs to be around to film it.
Yeah.
And, that just wasn't happening. There was no like actors or anything in the town that we live. So I shelved the idea until I came across Buffy Between the Lines and realized that the audio drama thing isn't a bad idea. Especially if you stray away from those old radio play things. And I'll be honest, like I always talk about Buffy Between the Lines being like a main focus as far as like what made me turn to audio drama. But I'll tell you, I still wasn't completely sold. This is going to be really weird, but the thing that actually made me think that, hey, you know what? A radio play could actually work is that there's a book on tape based on a Bruce Campbell book. And it was Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way, which was, it's like a fully cast audiobook where he's the narrator and he's talking about a fictional version of his life. And I absolutely ate up this audiobook. I loved it. It made me realize what I thought as a listener. And I'm not saying anything against Buffy Between the Lines. I think what they do over there is great, but my one problem I've always had with audio drama is I don't know what's going on. Like, sound effects just aren't enough for me. I never thought about having a narrator until I listened to that, which is, you know, it's read by Bruce Campbell, like all the narration and all of his dialogue, and then all the other dialogue is done by other characters. And that's when I finally realized, hey, I could do an audio drama. I just got to put narration in it so everyone knows what's going on. And then at that point, Geek by Night was born, and everything started going full speed ahead.
Now, considering the show is called Geek by Night, which we'll dive deeper into in a moment, you're obviously a geek. So how did you get into all this stuff?
Well, my dad is a big geek. When I was a kid, he was always trying to make me watch Star Trek and Doctor Who. And at the time, like, Star Wars wasn't, like, it was on video, but it wasn't, like, good quality or anything like that. So it took a long time. I didn't see Star Wars until, like, the THX box set came out on VHS. And it was, like, a big deal. I remember that because my folks watched a lot of QVC and Home Shopping Network, and they made a big deal about when that was coming out. I remember that. But we got that, and I think Star Wars is where it all kind of turned for me, because, I mean, I watched that first one. He was telling me, he was just like, you know, we'll watch this first one, because he wasn't expecting me to actually like it, because at that point, like, Doctor Who didn't really do anything for me. But, I mean, you know, you have to take into account, I was like an 8-year-old kid, 8, maybe 7, something like that. I was young. And so he had me watch the first one, and, you know, I really liked it. I was like, well, let's watch the next one. And, you know, we start watching it like, 8 at night, something like that. So it was like 10:30 at that point. And he was like, all right, we'll watch the next one. And then we get to the end of Empire. And of course, I don't want to stop there. So, you know, I beg him to watch the other one. He's like, you know, I had to wait 3 years to watch this. And I was like, I don't care. Put in the next one. So, you know, my dad ended up staying up with me until, you know, 2-3 in the morning watching all the Star Wars movies. And I think it was at that point, like, there was no turning back. Like, I was a geek through and through. Of course, I didn't know at the time. But then, like, as things went on, you know, like, you had the Batman animated series, and I loved that, and X-Men and Spider-Man on Fox, and, you know, and then Batman evolved into the Superman animated show, which I loved also. And just, like, the more that came into play, the more I started realizing that I liked this culture, and I liked all this stuff. You know, to be honest, I didn't get into comics until much later in life, because in high school and middle school, I was really into music. And so, you know, I was in a lot of bands. There was a period of time where I wasn't really embracing what I loved. I was just kind of doing what I thought was cool, I guess, or the closest thing to cool. There's really nothing cool about me being a musician, but I did it, and it was fine. But it wasn't until shortly after I graduated that and Superman comics when I was a kid that my dad would get me, and I'd read them and I'd enjoy them, but I didn't really think much of it, you know, other than that, mostly because, you know, I didn't have any money. So the only comics I would get is whatever my dad would get me. And he wasn't going to go, you know, to the comic shop every Wednesday. So I just read whatever, you know, I could get my hands on here and there, but I didn't really read my first comic, like what I consider my first comic, because I read those, but, you know, I barely remember them. Because I remember there was a big deal with Superman dying and the whole Doomsday thing. And I was really into that when I was a kid. And I read that whole thing. But that was a big event that was on the news and everything. Mm-hmm. I really didn't get into comics until I was graduated from high school. And the first comic I read that I actually took seriously was actually Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men. There's Buffy rearing her head again. At that point, I realized, wow, there's this is great. And I just, that was it. That was the turning point. That was where, you know, I started reading comics. Shortly after that, Ben and I started doing the podcast, like a couple years after that, I think. And it's been geek culture for me ever since.
No turning back.
No, absolutely not.
I know you touched on this earlier, but for those who aren't familiar with it, what is Geek by Night, briefly?
Geek by Night is the audio drama that I do. I produce it, and I created it a couple years ago. And it's about two best friends who co-own a comic shop, and then they are sort of group of friends as well. In the first episode, there's a accident involving a malfunctioning lightsaber, and they all get superpowers. So it's basically, you know, it's about what if, you know, a geek who reads comics and loves superheroes and loves all this geeky stuff, what happens when they get superpowers? Because you always see the guy just, you know, Joe Schmo Nobody, he gets powers, but the guy who actually wants them never does. And Joe Schmo Nobody doesn't want the powers and he hates them. And, you know, he's always given up being a superhero and he's forced into the superhero gig because somebody died and he needs to get revenge or whatever, or avenge, however, whatever the case may be. You know, I love comics, don't get me wrong, but I just get tired of that storyline. So I thought it was about time to give people powers that want them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Geek by Night is.
In my opinion, one of Geek by Night's greatest strengths is the writing. It's witty, it's funny. Where do you find inspiration for this?
Well, first of all, thank you. inspiration. I don't know. I'm a fanboy. I'm a geek. We're geeks, you know, we're into pop culture. And I mean, I guess that's where I draw a lot of my inspiration from, is just pop culture. But as far as the writing, I can't even remember when I started writing. The first thing I ever wrote, I wrote like a short story in first grade or something like that. I always felt like I needed to be a writer. And that it was always kind of my dream. And from that point on, like I wrote all the time, all the time. But my biggest downfall was that every time I wrote something, you know, I think I wrote my first script, I was in middle school, seventh grade probably. And every time I wrote something, my fingers, I guess, were bigger than what I could actually shoot as a film. Cause I would type these big epic things and I'd be like, yeah, we're going to make this. And they're like, are you freaking kidding me? So, you know, but I probably throughout high school, I'd say I probably wrote a script a year, like an actual full film script, culminating when I was a senior, I was in a video production class. And it was my second year, and this was like a new class or somewhat new, and they weren't used to second year students yet. When you're a second year video production student, they're like, I don't know what to do for you. Just do something, have something to turn in. So Ben and I joined forces and we decided we were going to make a film, and that was going to be our video production class. So I took the first semester and I wrote a script called Stereotypical. And, you know, I wrote this script. It was 140 pages, which,
wow.
I mean, yeah, that, I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, I don't even know. I mean, it was a comedy. It was supposed to be funny. It wasn't like overly dramatic or big or anything like that. It was much too ambitious for a high school student to shoot. But I wrote this thing and we started shooting it. We shot about, I don't know, maybe like a fifth of it. Maybe. And then at that point, we realized, you know what? Nobody else is as into shooting this as we are. All the actors were like, yeah, I can't make it because, you know, of this or that. Got to wash my hair, whatever. and, you know, it fell apart. And we told this to, you know, our video production instructor. And they were like, oh, yeah, you know, I knew that was going to happen. He's like, I just wanted to see how far you guys were going to get. So he was like, so congratulations on getting as far as you did. You know, here's an A. But yeah, so like I was always writing scripts all the time. And it didn't stop when I picked up music. Because like I said, I was really into music this whole time. But, you know, I was still really into video production and writing and everything. And I don't know, a lot of practice, I guess. You know, some of my favorite writers, screenwriters, I guess, or I love Joss Whedon, but that kind of goes without saying. There's so many, you know, it's ridiculous. Aaron Sorkin, I love. Amy Sherman-Palladino, I love. And if you'll notice, like all these people that I really love, Kevin Smith, they're all very stylized dialogue. I'm a big fan of stylized dialogue because to me, if the dialogue is realistic, what's the point? Like if I go see a movie or I watch something, or in this case, I guess listen to something, I don't want a realistic world. That's why I'm watching this in the first place, to escape a realistic world. You know, if I want a world where everyone talks in pop culture references and monologues, so be it. That's what I want. You know, and I love speed talking. That's one of my favorite things. That's why I love Aaron Sorkin and Amy Sherman-Palladino so much, is that Gilmore Girls and West Wing and Studio 60, I mean, you can't hardly keep up with those people. They're moving so fast. I love that. I love that. I think it's great. And, you know, totally unrealistic. Nobody can think of things off the top of their head that quickly. But, you know, that's okay. I don't want realism in my entertainment. That's why I'm a geek.
Well, you've definitely put together quite the cast of characters, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Which one of these characters do you think you're the most like?
I'm the most like? I mean, I'm probably closest to Elliot, but I think he's kind of the most easiest to connect with as a character, which is why I chose him to be the narrator. But I really think that most of these characters, there's just kind of an amalgam of who I am. I just kind of took little facets of my personality and things that I know that I could write and created these characters. And I think, I don't want to toot my own horn or anything like that, but I mean, I love these characters and I'm really proud of them and what they've become and how they've turned out on paper, of course, because I don't want to discredit the actors and what they've put into it, but I'm proud of what I've done to create these characters. And I think that the reason they work as well as they do, again, not to discredit the actors at all, which I'm sure we'll talk about them in a little while, but I think it's because I'm so familiar with all of them, because I've taken them from different facets of myself, that it makes them very easy to write, extremely easy to write. They take on a life of their own. If you know, Mindy says this, you know Gibson's going to say this. Like, I just know. I know that that's what has to happen, because if these characters were real, that's how they would interact with each other. And it's just, it's weird how that
As all
works
good
out.
Characters should, I think, in many ways, write themselves.
Right. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I think that that's a big part of it. But I'm a huge fan of the ensemble cast. I'm a huge fan of making that work, and I love characters, and I love character development and all that. I love, big epic stories and stuff like that, but what it comes down to make a story actually good is the characters. You can have a show like CSI or something like that, where the characters are completely two-dimensional, and people will like it because, you know, they like the plot and they like the mystery and all that. That's not really my forte. Like, I love characters. And, you know, for me, it's always characters first and plot second. Again, that's another reason why these characters are the way they are, why they're so strong, is because I really put my heart and soul in these characters and any characters that I work on. Because I think it's important to get them right and to make them make sense.
So where do you see Geek by Night going? Where is this all going to be, say, in a couple years from now? Are we still going to be hearing Geek by Night?
I'd hope to think so. Geek by Night, as it stands, okay, in my mind, is a 5-year show. I have 5 seasons planned out. Not all the fine-tuned details, because that's a product of the writer's room when we have our writing meetings. But the end of this season to the end of season 5, I have all the big plot points completely set in my mind, exactly where all these characters are going and where this plot is going. I absolutely want to finish. You know, I'm not planning on it going anywhere. I mean, of course, between seasons, because this is a seasonal show, you know, there will be a break just because, you know, I need it for my sanity. And
sanity is overrated.
And we need it to, you know, just to have, so we can plot out episodically what's going to happen and everything. Because you need that time to kind of just assess everything. But yeah, I mean, I foresee this show going through 2013, I guess. Yeah. Definitely a 5-season show. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say that it won't go beyond that, but, you know, it's not so definitive that there's nothing any of these characters could do beyond that, like the occasional special or whatever. I have no idea. But yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, 5 years from now, that's the end. So yeah, I definitely have it planned out though.
So you touched on the writer's room and the actors. You're not doing this whole thing alone, even if you are kind of the showrunner behind this. Take me through the process of producing an episode of Geek by Night.
Okay, well, it all started back in October. Really, you know, I wrote the, well, no, before that, because, you know, like I said, there was the video show and that was, God, that was back in January of 06, around that time period. Anyway, so I had that script sitting on my shelf for a long time. I came back to it, rewrote it into an audio drama format. I put out the initial announcement that I was doing this thing and I was looking for writers, and so we held auditions, and what they did was they just sent anything that they had, an example of their writing that was less than 5 pages. I got a bunch of submissions, more than I thought, for sure. I picked 5 or 6, I think, from there. And then I said, okay, here's my pilot. Read it and write a, you know, 3 to 5 page scene with these characters that does not involve their superpowers and also has no narration, because I wanted it to fit a certain style. That was very important to me. And I wanted to make sure that they could pick up on these characters. Out of those that I got sent, I picked my staff of writers. And so then we went forward from there. We had our first writers meeting and I said, you know, here's the bullet points. This is what needs to happen. This is where every character needs to be by the end of the season. What do we think? And then, you know, they would say, well, I think Gwen should, you know, switch bodies with someone. And they're like, okay, that's a good pitch. All right, you go write that script. And, you know, somebody else would say, you know, I want to do a Gibson Sin City style episode. And I was like, okay, go do it. And now I'm writing the finale right now. All the scripts are done up to that point. Everybody's waiting on me. But yeah, so, you know, that's how the screenwriting process works. And it's basically, they send me their first draft and then I give them some points and I say, you know, this works, this doesn't work. Maybe you should try this or that. And then they send me that second draft. And then from there, then I take the script and I do a once over. I just punch it up a little bit. And then that's the script that ends up going to the actors. The actors, we started holding auditions for around end of November, December, somewhere around there. And that was, I was flabbergasted at how many people auditioned for this show that it's not based on anything. It's not, I mean, it's completely original. We were just, we had a lot of auditions. I had a lot of auditions to go through. And, you know, thank God he did, because I was worried, you know. I was like, you know, I have no experience in this. How many auditions am I really going to get? What am I going to do? Like, what if they all suck? But the auditions that I got, almost every time I heard the person, and I was like, yep, that's Gibson, or that's absolutely sign. When I heard Andrew Ball for the first time, I was just like, oh my God, this is the vocal representation of exactly what I had in mind. It was scary at some points, but I love the cast we ended up with. And so, you know, at that point, we do a table reading through Skype. We all have the script and I read all this, you know, quote unquote stage direction. It's really sound effects more often than not. But I read that and they read their dialogue and it gives me a chance to kind of build a rapport with them as well as direct. I'm not a visual director. Like if I directed a film from a visual standpoint, it would probably look like a Kevin Smith movie, because I'm just not a visual person. I'm just not. Like I'm very straightforward. Like, what? It's two people talking. Why do I have to switch shots every 7 seconds? Like every half a second. I, you know, whatever. Just do a 2-shot, leave it there, and you know, that's fine. The actors will make the movie good. I'm very much an actor's director. Like that's very important to me. I want to make sure that they give the best performance and the performance in my mind or better, because 9 times out of 10, it usually is better. It was very important to me from the get-go. And the fact that I have this core group of characters, I get to work with these people, you know, every couple of weeks when we do a table read. I mean, those things are just an absolute party. Those are so much fun. I mean, I look forward to them every time we do it. It's great. So yeah, like that gives me the time to talk to everyone and make sure they understand what's going on with their character and everything. Because that's the thing too. I'm kind of secretive and I probably shouldn't be. And that's kind of mean, but like, you know, they'll be like, yeah, so what's this scene about? And I was like, I can't tell you that. You're just going to have to, you're just going to have to go with it. And they're like, yeah, but I don't get it. I was like, you know, why am I saying this? And I was like, yeah, well, you know, you'll find out.
They have to wait like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, obviously not as long, but yeah, like I'm very secretive. It's just a thing about me because I'm big on spoilers. Like I hate spoilers.
Wash dies.
Yeah, and a lot of the people involved with the show, you know, they're also fans of the show. And, you know, a lot of them, I don't think they mind that I do it, to be honest, because they like getting that script and being surprised. There was a couple times where that happened and they were just like, what? And none of those episodes have aired yet, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, so the table reads are a lot of fun. And from that point, they go and they use my direction and my notes that I gave them and they record their lines and they turn their lines in. And then from there, right now I'm editing it all by myself and I edited it all by myself in the beginning. My girlfriend, she did some editing for a while, but now she's too busy. So I'm doing it by myself again. But yeah, so no help right now editing. And that's a pain. But at the same time, I love having my fingers in this show that deep. And I know that if the show ends up not being good, there's no one to blame but myself, and I like that. That's weird because a lot of people would probably want to shovel the blame on someone else, but I'm just like, you know, if something didn't work, that's my fault, and I know that. Now, after doing this whole season by myself, I'm probably not going to be opposed to looking for editors next season to help out a little bit with scenes here and there. But right now, yeah, I am doing it by myself, and we'll see how I feel at the end if I can keep going like this, because it is very time consuming, but I do think it's worth it. It makes every scene seem similar. You know, it all has the same thumbprint on it. Being that I've been working on podcasting for so long, well, I say working like we get paid, but
geek by night, you know, in more ways than one.
Yeah. So I enjoy editing. It's just, it's a lot of work, but it is well worth it when I get to publish the episode. So
you mentioned that you were nervous when you're going through the casting process. How did that feel when you finally got Geek by Night out there for the first time? Were you surprised by it?
Well, when we did our first table read, I was absolutely on cloud nine, because you have to keep in mind, you know, at this point, I mean, yeah, I had written tons of scripts. None of them had ever done anything, you know, with the exception of Stereotypical, where I'd shot like a few scenes. Nothing had really gone anywhere that I'd written. So this was really the first time that I was hearing my writing performed. And, you know, it became one of those things where I was just like, man, maybe, you know, I kind of am a good writer. What do you know? and you know, it was nice. And you know, I heard them perform it. I was like, wow, this is going to turn out really great. I might have something here. And then when I started editing it, like it came together even more. And I was just like, wow, this really works. I'm really happy with this. And it got to the point where I was finished with episodes 1 and 2 before we launched, which I probably should have waited longer than that. But I was anxious because I listened to that first episode. God, I don't even know how many times. I would listen to it obsessively. I probably tweaked that thing so many times. It was ridiculous. But I was so happy with that final product on that first episode. You know, when I put it out, yeah, I was scared because I'm just like, you know, God, what if they don't like it as much as I do? But at that point, you know, I was so happy with it that I was just like, you know, if they don't, I like it. So that's really all that matters. You know, if we get 500 listeners, so be it. I'll do it for them. I don't care. You know, when we released that first episode, I was shocked at the amount of comments that we got on it and the amount of compliments, and just, it was more than I could handle. There was a lot. I mean, it was overwhelming. Then from that point on, when we went to, you know, episode 2 and onward, and it just started climbing higher and higher and more people started listening, and it's fantastic. It's more than I ever thought possible with, you know, a little dinky audio drama. But, you know, it makes me feel good because it makes me think, you know, I created something good. And, you know, hopefully everyone continues to like it as the show progresses.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you recently returned from a hiatus. What can people expect in upcoming episodes of Geek by Night? Give us a little teaser, if you will.
Shoo. All right. Well, in the end of the last episode, you kind of left it on a bit of a cliffhanger. Look forward to that sort of going in a direction, in a particular direction. But I'll tell you, next episode, episode 7, Simon's Laboratory. That episode was rewritten probably 5 times. And here's why. It's a very important and very big episode about the future of the show and where the direction that the show is going. It's a big step for us, I think. I kind of look at those first 5 episodes as sort of a block of episodes, and episode 6 kind of works as the end of the beginning. And episode 7 is the beginning of everything else. And yeah, it's, if you thought the cliffhanger at the end of 6 was nail biting, you know, chomping to the bit to get to the next episode, wait till you get to the end of episode 7. So, and then from there, we're taking the show in new places, and I'm really excited. I mean, not like completely 360 type of new places, but we will be experimenting a little. Episode 10 is going to be a big kind of experimental episode. It's huge. It's a massive episode, especially in length. And I'm really, really looking forward to editing that. Episode 10 is just gonna, it's gonna be great. Even if nobody else likes it, I love it so much. Episode 10 is a pretty big episode, and it's very character driven. So that's a big deal. There is a little romance in the future coming very soon. Probably not coming from where you might think. Yeah, so lots to look forward to. And like I said, I'm writing the finale right now. And the finale, you know, I'll go on record right now and say it's going to change everything. So there you go. I mean, it really is. I'm a big fan of turning everything around. I love that big left turn that you don't see coming, because, you know, I get bored with the status quo, and I like to change it up. And so, you know, look forward to that when you get to the finale, because it's, again, it might not be big to everyone else. I think it's big. That could be not so big, or it could be really big. I don't know. Depends on your perspective, I guess. But it is a natural progression, in my opinion, and it's what I always envisioned. So,
well, I did ask for a teaser, so.
Yep.
Y'all will just have to listen. I know I'll be listening and looking forward to this as Geek by Night continues through its life. I'm definitely enjoying Geek by Night. This is geek cred, after all. So, Scott, yeah. Where can everybody go to check out Geek by Night and everything else you're doing?
Yeah, the website that I'm doing with, you know, I mentioned them earlier, Randy McKinney and Wayne Porter, and then, of course, my co-host on Two Geeks, Ben Nollet. We do a website called geekshow.us. That's where you can find Geek by Night. You can find my show, Two Geeks and Mike in a Podcast, as well as my other two shows that don't come out nearly as often. True Believers, which is our comic book show, and then Meteor Geek, which we do on Smallville. And then, you know, of course, Wayne and Randy's show, Geek Entertainment. But yeah, you should go check out the site. We have a little community there, and it's fun. I love the people that listen to our show. Our fans are awesome. I love them. But yeah, geekshow.us.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
We're just about to the end of the show, but before I go, I want to remind you, if you got any questions, comments, feedback, whatever, I really want to hear it. I live for your feedback. Email me, geekcred@geekcred.net, in text or MP3 audio feedback, or leave a comment on the website at www.geekcred.net. Another way to get involved is by joining the great IRC community. If you've got your own IRC client, point it to irc.finstack.net and join #GeekCred. Or you can use the web chat on the website. Just point your browser to geekcred.net/chat. That fancy little Ajax web chat will even work on mobile browsers such as the iPhone. Pretty freaking sweet if you ask me. Please consider subscribing to get the show delivered to you automatically for free using a podcatcher of your choice such as iTunes. If you're using iTunes while you're there, I'd really appreciate it if you'd show the show a little love by leaving a review. or by supporting us at other popular podcasting sites. GeekCred is a proud member of Friends in Tech. To find out more, visit www.friendsintech.com. Well, that's it for me for now. So until next time, geek on!